Hello and welcome to the Ohio Arts Council's Rife Gallery. I'm Kat Sheridan, Director of the Space, and today I am thrilled to share with you the 2023 Biennial Juried Exhibition. And here to help us understand these selections and get really deep into it are the jurors. And I'm gonna let these fabulous people introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Yusuf Dubois Abdul Latif. I'm an artist and educator from Toledo, Ohio.
I'm Dr. Melissa Crum. I'm an arts education professor and inclusion equity practitioner.
I'm Jolene Powell, a working artist and a professor, gallery director, and diversity, equity, and inclusion coordinator, all at Marietta College.
All right, so we had 1,661 individual submissions from over 900 artists. And these jurors had the very tall task of narrowing it down to these 64 pieces of artwork. Can you all chat a little bit about what that was like? What were you looking for? How did you make your choices?
Yeah, it was really, at first, a bit overwhelming. And then it became really exciting to see all of the creativity that's all across the state and all of the different mediums. And so I think I started with trying to understand if there was some type of narrative that was coming from the piece. Was there something uniquely speaking to Ohio? And trying to figure out what does the artist want me to better understand about this kind of the place in which they are creating. And that's really what I started to kind of really look for.
Well, same, right? Like, it was very overwhelming. And I think that because of that, it, you know, gave it its, you know, its importance, right? Like, we needed to kind of sift through all the things and edit. And I think my process when I look at artwork is I try to void out. I try to just empty any kind of preconceived notions of what I'm looking at and see and listen to what comes in. And also it allows me to see what the artist is trying to communicate. You know, sometimes it's narrative, sometimes it's like right there in your face, but it's this type of, I call it soul speak. You know, that it inherently offers a lot of insight with even just the smallest amount of information.
Well, and I do think it is worth saying three times the word overwhelmed, as Kat said, so I'm gonna say that as well. Because looking at that many images and knowing that we have to distill it down to, you know, very few was in fact overwhelming. And so for me as a juror, you know, along with what they have already mentioned, I wanted to find examples of the best in a particular medium. So, you know, best examples of painting, the best examples of portraiture painting, the best examples of ceramics that were submitted. And then also thinking about, you know, the region that we represented, all of Ohio, so looking at where people were from. And so there was a lot going into the process of calling it down to an exhibition that that in fact truly represented the state.
David Denniston, he's a Columbus artist, and the title is Welcome to Ice Cream Land. And what I think is also really important is that you all, when you were jurying, hands down, you were like, yes, absolutely, has to be in the show. And that, like, to have that immediate consensus is pretty special. So it's nice to open up the conversation with this one.
Absolutely, thank you. So I really, really like this work even more so now that I see it in person and it's in the size. And I really appreciate this narrative component. So Denniston told us about the figure here, Ricky Jackson, and how he had a particular type of experience. But even that doesn't give us everything. You feel like there's so much more to this story. Like, is Mr. Jackson a Prince fan? And why is he particularly wearing, what's the purpose of purple? And it makes me want to know more about this person and really stick to and really investigate each of these details within it. I really enjoy this piece and how also it's very much Ohio. This is someone who's connected to the city, connected to the state, and who's still here with us. So what does it look like when art wants us or kind of asks us to explore the everyday folks in our community? And how can that be highlighting folks that we might not have considered thinking about before?
I feel like also to add to uplifting the folks that are in our community, in the choice of purple, which is I feel is a very transcendental color, you know, it helps to bring in that type of spirit. And, you know, as a young man growing up in the church, purple was a very important component to creating an environment and the idea of transcendence, right? So to see him levitating, but not only that, he's using purple. And then let's add another layer of like prints, right? And, you know, that's that idea of like, how can you hear a color, right? And like, this is a very good example of that. Portrait of Alana by Greg Martin. It's a black and white photograph. The thing that speaks to me about this piece is not only Greg's use of his process, which is very important and it gives a very timeless feel. Also through the process and the subject and how Greg Martin is treating the subject, you really get this idea of intimacy and sincerity. And it's through the gaze of the subject of Alana that you find not only you're thinking about the picture of the person, but you can only draw these types of feelings by thinking about yourself. So as it is a portrait of Alana, it is also something that is an invitation to reflect on the emotional connection that one would have with this image. It's in places where she's touching the shoulder, right? It's the unapologetic use of the shadow in black, right? It's this aura that is really emanating from her, and this warmth that you're getting. Again, we see portraits all the time in social media. This piece is really moving away from that because it's, you know, this is very intentional, right? So it's not only who and the subject, but it's the composition, the overall composition of the piece. So you have this layer of imagery and information that's happening in the background. You have the artist with the opportunity to manipulate the film as they're going through the process. It's something that you have to capture, right? In digital film, you can always manipulate it after the fact. Here, the artist may not know what's going to happen. So there's this very intuitive, serendipitous type of opportunity that I'm pretty sure that Greg really enjoys. Film photographers have to rely on this idea of luck. And I think that's a very personal space to be in. So I think that's one of the things that differentiates this from a lot of the different portrait photography that we see on social media or any other platforms. It's a very important anchor, I believe, for this exhibition and really placed beautifully inside the gallery. And I'm excited for folks to enjoy it as I do.
Hi, so we're here to talk about Anna England from Felicity. And really what drew me to this piece was just the form that she chose. The asymmetry was very beautiful, but even more so, the things that struck me was the almost assumption around the strength of the piece, meaning these things look sharp and they look like they're here to protect in some kind of way. And that's the center of what she's talking about, this kind of false sense of protection. So she uses, in actuality, very fragile pieces. So these shells are actually fragile, but they're constructed in such a way that they're supposed to be protecting what's the interior. But the interior is equally as fragile. So these shells that were once there to protect snails, and this false sense of using things around us or systems of protection, but really it becomes this act of futility, because what she encourages us to do is really think about, are we really as protected emotionally, physically, whatever it might be, as we actually think we are? And what does it look like to really lean into that vulnerability and think about, what does it look like for me to know that harm may happen, that the things around us might not be as strong as we think, and what does it look like to lean into that? But you don't get that on the front of it. She wants us to think that this is, this place, this structure is here for safety, but it might not be. And so that narrative that's happening not only with the image, but what she shares with us, I found really fascinating and actually causes us to be a bit more reflective in how we're thinking about our communities, our society, the way we move throughout the world. And I found that really amazing.
This piece is by Molly Fitzpatrick, and she's from Mayfield Heights, and it's called Traveler, and it's a fiber piece. And I responded to the color, the analogous colors of blue and green and the subtle gradation. And then incorporated within that was the complementary color of red. And so there's this optical illusion. And so if you look at the piece long enough, you certainly have after imagery and definitely some pulsations that happen. And so I responded to this just simply being a piece that reminds us of seeing and reminds us of our humanity, right? It wasn't anything other than my personal reaction or the viewer's reaction to what they're seeing. And that rhythm is something then that we respond to as humans. And so it's something that we experienced, our breath, it's our heartbeat. And so we can see a pattern, and then we can internalize it and feel it for ourselves. And so it's such a nice pause and such a nice sort of meditative moment in the exhibition for me. This piece is by Summer Zickafoos, and she's from Canfield, Ohio. And the piece is called Visiting Kitchen to Kitchen. It's a sculpture. And what drew me to it was the original, or initially looking at the sort of minimalistic color palette, but then reading about the piece and finding out that the photograph is from a Facebook page, and then the cast teacup comes from, you know, the idea of actually meeting with a friend. So you have your friends on Facebook, and then the intimacy of meeting with a friend face to face. Also, I really responded to the intimacy of this, you know, the sort of act of preparing a meal, chopping, that sort of thing. And then all the places to sit and have a conversation, right? We're invited here with the teacup here, and then the chairs, and then outside, right? Here are these lawn chairs, right? That they seem like they've been there a while, so there's a history there. You can tell that the person has been outside looking in the yard. So there's all these places for conversation, for friendships. There's also a sense, a timeliness of current friends, and then maybe friends that are no longer with us. In the art world, we're often working with things that we're allowed to do and things that we're not allowed to do as artists. I am also a practicing artist. And so what's nice about this piece is someone might think, is this what one would do with photography? Is this what one would do with sculpture? And so that's the beauty of creating, is that you get to break the rules and do whatever you want, right? And so you can marry sculpture with photography in something that is very unified and very poetic like this. This piece is by Amy Lee. Is from Lyndhurst, and the piece is called The Walls Have No Defense. And what I was drawn to initially was the paper, the remarkable palette, this sort of almost monochromatic, but not quite piece, and the warm tones, and then just the quality of the paper, of the handmade paper, and the skill there in that. But then also the concept of bricks and the idea that when we're wounded or injured in some way, we put up these sort of metaphorical walls. And how healthy is it for us to have those walls? How realistic is it for us to carry those walls with us as we go through our life? As you can see with this piece, it starts at the top where the walls and the bricks are definitely more set up to be structurally sound, and then they start to fall. And so for me, I was drawn not only to the physicality of the paper and the stunning paper in and of itself, but then also the concept and the idea of walls and breaking them down in a lifetime.
So we're going to talk about Kate Minke's piece and really thinking about the sculpture, how it represents, it's supposed to represent women, specifically housewives across the world, but uniquely situated in areas of conflict. And of course, she created this work before what's happening in our world right now, which is the Palestinian and Israeli conflict that we are so keen aware of. We have multiple ways of telling stories. We have clear written words and narrative, but we can also see story within images. And art has a way of drawing our attention to things that maybe we didn't consider before. And so when we think about the ugliness of what's happening in the world and what might be happening around us, we can use art not to beautify the challenges and kind of gloss over what harm is actually happening, but art gives us a way to present the difficulty in a way that we can receive it and make us have to think about something that we haven't considered before. And so art has a unique way of telling us a story in a new way that could potentially be more palatable or at the very least, bring our attention to things that we didn't consider, that we weren't paying attention to, and now we have the opportunity to think a little differently, shift our perspective, and expand our stories when we're talking about or thinking about those who are around us or those who are around the world. When we come to this piece, we don't have a particular woman in mind. You can put any woman in place here. But they're going through a very similar struggle. The home which they reside is falling apart, and there's an absence of family. So we can think about the Israeli mothers who are challenged with the harm that's come to their family. We can think about Palestinian mothers in the West Bank and Gaza Strip who are attempting to continue to be house mothers, housewives to their children, to their family in the absence of electricity and Wi-Fi and water. And so when we come to this piece, we can not only think about what might it be to be in those places of humanitarian crisis, but we can also be considering what are the struggles that are happening in our own cities and how might we connect to folks across the world. And so I appreciate this piece and how it helps us rethink how are we considering those around us and those who we may never see.
This piece is by Will Grimm. It's from Cleveland, Ohio. It's called Static. It was made in 2021. It took about 3 years for him to accumulate these scraps, or what he would call crumbs, to create this quilt. And one thing that really draws me into this piece is that it's very balanced, but in a very intuitive way, the complexity that is happening within the artist. As an artist myself, we are experiencing life on so many different levels and in so many different ways. And this piece really speaks to that, and it speaks to all of those complexities and merging all of these ideas into one mosaic, one tapestry. And it's really an emotional experience. But to really describe that emotion, you know, he's using the material that you can feel, like literally. Right? You can wrap yourself in it. You can cover yourself with it. It's an engaging piece. Like, this is like engaged art making, right? And it's talking not only about color, but he's thinking about time. All of these pieces, all of this fabric comes from some other thing, right? And it was made in another time, and he's bringing it all together into one place. Growing up, I grew up in a time where music was, and still is, heavily sampled, right? Like, we use music from older time periods, and we bring this music, the sound, into the present to create new compositions. So what ends up happening is you can peel that back and see where those samples come from and really dig back into the jazz or the folk songs that where it came from. There's a song by John Coltrane, right, called Giant Steps. And the beginning of the song is just this crescendo, right? And this is that, right? This is the beginning before the horns come in and just kind of like settles everything. It just really, you know, has that, you know, ability to do that, right? So this is the cymbals, the drums, the everything comes in, and then all of a sudden, John comes in with that horn. It's like, you know, and it just really grounds us. And this is happening with all of us, right? Maybe I have synesthesia or something like that. I don't know, but like, this really illustrates that. And then you get these bits of blue that helps us kind of like, you know, find our way. It's a map, you know? He's just giving us everything. And we hear this all the time, like, everything is art. This is true. But it's the responsibility of the artist to kind of synthesize these things and bring it into focus for us, you know? And to illustrate this idea, yes, everything has the ability to be art. But the art experience is allowing us to participate, and the best way to participate is to hone it and help us focus where we can enter. And this is like, you can literally, like I said, you know, you can wrap yourself in this piece.
So here is a work from Paul from Cincinnati. What it makes me think of first is still life, and really thinking about light and objects and things like that. But I do feel like there's a narrative here that he hasn't quite told us, but I'm pulling certain things from it. And so first, what I see is a sculpture that makes me think of the organ of a heart, right? And so what does that mean for it to be at the center of this, be the centerpiece of this table? And it makes me want it to be a dining room table, so there's some functionality around it. And there in the middle, what appears to be, is the shape of the continent of Africa. So what is this connection between what looks like maybe the organ of a heart, but also this particular continent that's known to be where the oldest human being was discovered? So knowing that humanity seemed to be started in this particular continent, what does that mean? And thinking about that brings me to these two images, which makes me think of these busts of indigenous folks. And thinking about what does that mean for us to have these busts on this table. And what came up for me is there's this competing thing that's happening around the narrative of how we think about indigenous people in the United States. And there tends to be this kind of time capsule we like to put indigenous people in, almost in this kind of archaic, old, and yet timeless space, and not always thinking about indigenous people as being in the present, in today. And what does that mean to almost have this almost performative kind of honoring, right? Because if we're thinking about a group of people in the past, how are we thinking about and conceptualizing them in the present? Something that we do in the United States is have a deep appreciation of culture. People will talk about their love of jazz or African masks or particular tapestry from indigenous communities, but that same love and investment doesn't seem to always translate to the actual human beings who created those cultures. And so there's something about this piece that is asking us to honor the symbolically a group of people, but not necessarily asking us to think about what is our contemporary relationship with the actual human beings that we say we want to be honoring, that we want to be thinking about and considering. Which makes me think of a host of ways we do that, like land acknowledgements, which I think is amazing and really helps us think about who are the caretakers of this land. But I always question the institutions that want us to kind of do that work, but not really, and wondering what are they doing around that same type of honoring of those same human beings in the present. And so I feel like these busts are asking us some type of question around where's the center of life? How are we really thinking about these folks? But then, and how they end a part of this functionality of our everyday life. But then what are we doing with the idea of these groups of folks in the present? And so I'm constantly in conversation with this piece, thinking about the things that I'm already struggling with some of these concepts. And so I really appreciate the simplicity, but also the complexity of the work.
All right, folks, so that is it for the spotlight today. We're gonna finish off in front of Nora Daniels' piece, Sew Circle. And what was really nice is hearing the jurors just a moment ago talking about how they're being rewarded by the slow look, that things are revealing themselves to them as they look at this work. So when you come in and have a look, make sure you spend some time. Thank you all for joining us. A very big thank you to our jurors, Dr. Melissa Crum, Jolene Powell, Youssef Dubois, Abdul Latif, for winnowing down to 64 pieces from 1,661. That's just a smidge under 4%. That's a really big deal, so thank you, truly. I think they created a well-appointed exhibition. Please come and enjoy it. A big thank you to the governor, the legislature, the Ohio Arts Council's board for supporting the Ohio Arts Council, this great space, and of course, Ohio artists.